Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the February 17th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. If we could have your attention, we appreciate it. I would ask if you have any electronic devices to please silence them for the meeting. Remind you that there are emergency exits to my right in the back of the room and to my left at the front of the room. In the event of a fire, please don't use the elevator. First order of business tonight is a public hearing. A public hearing will be held by the Tompkins County Legislature at 5:30 p.m. on February 17th concerning the proposed update of the Tompkins County Comprehensive Plan. Got a number of blue cards from people. Do you want to speak at the public hearing or do you want to speak on privilege of the floor? If you do on the public hearing, please let me call out the names. And if you want to speak at the hearing, just go right ahead and can come up to the microphone. Otherwise, we'll hold you until the privilege of the floor a little later. Peter Bordaglio. Well, please step up. Tell us where you're from, and happy to have your comments.
Good evening. I'm Peter Bordaglio. I'm a resident of Trumansburg, and I'm here this evening representing Black Oak Wind Farm, where I'm the president. And also, I'm also representing the Tompkins County Climate Protection Initiative, which I've been the coordinator of since 2008. TCPI, as it's known, is a coalition of business, government, education, and nonprofit leaders that are committed to helping the county achieve its greenhouse gas emissions goal by the date that the county is set. And it's also aimed at facilitating and accelerating the transition to a clean energy economy. So that's really the vision. My perspective on the comprehensive plan is through that lens, involved with climate protection and clean energy. And I just wanted to say that I very strongly support the comprehensive plan, and especially the energy and climate element of the plan. I've just been had the opportunity to work pretty closely with the planning department over the last few years, and just really impressed with their forward looking ability to really think about the kind of future we want to build here in Tompkins County, and especially, as I said, in regards to climate protection and energy. And just wanted to say I think we're very fortunate to have such expertise in the county, and I hope that the legislature will go ahead and approve the plan, particularly since it obviously supports the goal of the legislature in terms of climate and clean energy. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Sarah Hess, did you want to speak at the public hearing? Please.
Hello. I'm Sarah Hess. I live in the city of Ithaca. And I've spent a great deal of time in the last 6 or 8 years looking at climate issues and energy policies. And like Peter, I am here to also give my strong support to the staff of the Planning Department and all those who contributed to the 2015 Comprehensive Plan. In contrast to New York State's energy plan, which was proposed last year, this truly is a comprehensive plan that we can be proud of. The document, with over 100 pages, includes a great deal of detailed research, local as well as national, and has clearly articulated rationales for the action plans and policies proposed. Regarding the climate goals, I strongly endorse the existing goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 80% by 2050, as well as the interim goal of 20% reduction by 2020. I would support an even higher goal. This goal was established a few years ago, and things are changing rapidly, as you know. Cornell recently announced that they pushed their climate action plan ahead by a whopping 15 years. Given the current landscape of technology and commitment, Cornell now thinks it can be 100% carbon neutral by 2035, not 2050. Think about it. In our county plan, I especially want to commend the writers on the concrete nature of the action steps, especially those that concern 4 points. 1, building our local economy by prioritizing renewable energy solutions. 2, increasing energy conservation. 3, securing water resources. And 4, preparing a disaster recovery plan. All these steps affect everyone, but especially, I think, they affect our county's most vulnerable populations. Expanding use of renewable fuels in particular will increase our local resiliency and security for the increasingly harsh climate future that we face. Our nation would be much better prepared if all counties had a comprehensive plan like this one. I urge the legislature to support and approve this plan without change.
Thank you. Randy Brown, did you want to speak at the public hearing?
My name is Randy Brown. I live in the town of Newfield. I'm here. I read through the comprehensive plan. I'm sure there's much more involved in it besides what I read. I really support the planning department. I think Tompkins County is lucky to have a very high-quality planning group. And I support the majority of what's in there. A little off track, I didn't bring my script, but related to all the carbon footprint things, I think the first thing that you should be doing is focusing on reducing your use. So many homes in this town that have lots of ice hanging out the roofs means they don't have insulation in their house. So look at those kinds of issues. Those are cheap dollar things that you can really get rewards on. I know there's some county programs out there for rehab now. I think I read something about that on the website about how people can upgrade their homes. Look at the trailer parks in Newfield, the least energy efficient things out there. The people that can't afford to pay the energy, and they got the single pane windows in these trailers, and nothing's being done, and it's probably Section 8 that we're paying for anyway. So we really should focus on helping those people that could have the biggest help, that have minimum dollars to spend on electricity, where the dollars go outside of the local government here and the money's not spent here. But I'm really here about planning, so I apologize. So Newfield has its first planning document ever. I was on that board, the first one that's ever existed. We have a very good comprehensive plan that mirrors a lot of the similar things that are in the Tompkins County plan. And I think you really need to involve each town in the county's planning for what's going on in those towns and look for those things where there's common ground and there's energy behind it to get those things accomplished. So I really support the comprehensive plan. I think that there's a lot of resource. I think Cornell, frankly, is lax in their efforts in Newfield. We just got declined for a simple little assistance helping with our Hammett plan from the Cornell University. We're not asking for a lot of help, but Cornell could really step it up, in my opinion. They own property in Newfield and all over the county, and they need to step it up. IC should be not far behind. So thank you.
Thank you. Martha Armstrong.
Hi, Martha Armstrong. I live in the town of Ithaca, and I am here because I am the chair of the Planning Advisory Board. So I've been chair for, I guess, 2 or 3 years, but I've been chair through this whole process. And I just wanted to bring the PAB's support to your venue here. We had opportunities back even probably 2 years ago to discuss the scope for the updating of the comprehensive plan, to discuss what new elements might be added this time around. We had opportunities to review the process for public input and also the actual comments that were received from stakeholders and from the general public. Many, many comments, of course, came in. We had some very rich discussions at the PAB about priorities for each topic area and discussions about how to present data, how to evaluate the actions, and what should be sort of the key values. So we were able to provide a sounding board for the staff as they integrated all their input. And, of course, we reviewed the final draft in December. We had each member of the Planning Advisory Board take an area that they were really most knowledgeable about and review that final draft very carefully so that we could have a good, solid discussion before we recommended it coming forward to the legislature for approval. I just want to say that I think staff has done a great job in guiding this very complex process. I think we can be proud as a county of this comprehensive plan as a document that's going to help us in setting our priorities and guiding policy as we move forward. I also want to mention, as you had at least one person here from TICPE, but the staff had to reach out to a lot of different organizations who also participated in this. And to speak for a moment as a staff member of TCAD, we needed to coordinate the economic development strategy and also had some good discussions around energy policy so that we would be well coordinated with the county's values and plan going forward. And I think the staff did a really good job in facilitating that. Certainly, we recognize that the environment surrounding this kind of a complex plan is constantly changing, and we will need to respond to those changes as time goes along, but I think this provides a terrific foundation for having a resource that has our current data, has broad community perspective, sets the tone as far as the values for making decisions going forward and for policy. And I think we're going to have a good base for promoting our community vitality and quality of life here in Tompkins County. So, of course, I came here to support adoption of the comprehensive plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Joe Wilson.
Good evening. I'm Joe Wilson, and I want to thank everyone for the opportunity to comment on the proposed 2015 comprehensive plan at this public hearing. I live at 75 Hunt Hill Road in the town of Dryden. My wife and I live on savings and public pensions. I am a member of a number of advocacy groups, but I speak for myself and my wife this evening. As a retiree, I have had an opportunity over the last several years to learn about the link between energy and development, especially at the local level. I have learned that greenhouse gas emissions are the prime cause of the kind of weather extremes we are now experiencing. All join me in a burr. So I strongly endorse the proposed goal for reduction of greenhouse gas emissions by 80% by 2050, and I do not support any greenhouse gas emission goal being reduced. I also endorse the comments that have already been made and are likely to be made going forward, that the county seriously consider the more ambitious goals that are being demonstrated by institutions such as Cornell. I have learned through the Sustainable Tompkins Alternatives Project how local energy demand can be reduced and how current renewable technology can economically serve much of our current and future energy needs at the local level. So I support the call in the plan for accelerating the transition from fossil fuels to renewables as sources of heat and energy for other uses. I have learned how closely local development and energy are linked, so I support the plan's recommendation to consider local energy and local economy issues together going forward. I have learned that the business-as-usual approach to expanding fossil fuel use and infrastructure build-out will prevent our reaching the greenhouse gas emission reduction goals articulated in the plan. So I support the Planning Department's recommendation that every proposal for the expansion of fossil fuel use and fossil fuel infrastructure be given the most rigorous scrutiny. And I urge all of you, as members of the legislature, not to be passive about this, but to assertively use your individual and collective power and influence in the pursuit of alternatives to more fossil fuel use. And I also commend, or particularly commend, the notion that you, as leaders of the county, opinion leaders and political leaders, can have a strong influence on the town boards from the districts with which you, from which you are elected. Last, through the eyes of fellow Dryden residents, I have seen how our local distribution utility, NYSEG, and its parent, Iberdrola S.A., do business and how they treat individuals. Their callous and often unthinking approaches have reemphasized to me why all of us need to become locally energy independent through renewables as quickly as possible. Major elements of this plan will move us in that direction. So that is an additional and very important reason why I support this plan. For all these reasons, I urge and request that each legislator support and approve the energy and greenhouse gas emissions chapter without change, unless you want to step forth more ambitious greenhouse gas emission goals. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Teresa Ault.
I looked through the Tompkins County Comprehensive Plan. I really liked everything I read. I want to go back and read it again more carefully. There are a lot of good ideas about protecting the environment, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and how we can get to that through better housing and transportation. It's good. It's very good on the need for economic development that brings living wage jobs. A few things may be missing. I see little, and my points are unrelated to each other. I see little in it about mental health care, although mental illness, along with its companion addiction, may well be at the root of many problems that our communities face. There's almost nothing about the divisions in our community other than town gown and age. But some problems probably do originate in racial or other discrimination. And there's no acknowledgement that low wages, which are seen as a problem, may be correlated with the low level of union organization in a community that is now urban rather than rural. But on the whole, it's very good.
Thank you, Teresa. Brian Eden?
I'm Brian Eden from the Village of Cayuga Heights and a member of the Environmental Management Council. I appreciate this opportunity to provide comments on this update of the comprehensive plan. EMC members have been engaged with this process since its inception. We provided responses for the kickoff survey, sponsored a presentation at our October meeting, and filed 10 pages of comments. Subsequently, we provided additional comments to the Planning Department on December 26th in response to the planning staff's review of our submissions. I wish to enter those comments into the record at this hearing. We strongly support the substantive content of this plan. I wish to commend the staff for their time-consuming drafting of the plan, diligent efforts to engage the entire community, and their subsequent incorporation of resident contributions in the final document. I'm sure that they are thrilled that this process is drawing to a close. I've been hearing a few, sighs of relief over the past month. I would like to highlight only two sections of my remarks. In the chapter on energy and greenhouse gas emissions, there is a section, Consider Energy and the Economy Together. Some have responded to this concept with skepticism. Reliance on more energy-efficient building envelopes and renewable energy systems can reduce a building's energy requirements while limiting external to the building fuel needs. If one were to consider a long-term horizon in capital investments, as well as maintenance and operating costs, these initial decisions would be rewarded. Not only would the rate of return be sufficient, but the costs and inconvenience to the municipality to support such development would be reduced. We can densify downtown Ithaca without requiring major street work for larger capacity infrastructure projects. Wouldn't that be well received? For example, Build Smart New York is Governor Cuomo's statewide initiative to accelerate energy efficiency in state buildings while incorporating broader state policy goals to foster cost-effective investment, stimulate the clean energy marketplace, advance energy security and resiliency, and protect the environment and public health. At the centerpiece of Build Smart New York is Executive Order 88, which requires a 20% improvement in energy efficiency at state-owned and managed buildings by the year 2020. This requires improvements beyond the existing building and energy codes. Whatever the underlying motivation leading to the adoption of this program, we appreciate New York State for taking the lead. Despite the relatively inexpensive cost of natural gas today, given increasing demand and growing challenges to easily access energy resources, energy costs will most certainly trend upward. This program should save substantial taxpayer dollars. We also strongly support the 2020 energy strategy. We wish to support even more ambitious goals. However, given the wide range of climate science literacy in our community, some residents may not have the tolerance for a more aggressive greenhouse gas emissions reduction program at this time. Following planning staff's 2015 completion of an updated greenhouse gas emissions inventory, the last was done in 2008, and recommendations from the Energy Roadmap Steering Committee by the end of this year, we may be able to revisit this discussion of appropriate goals. I realize that there is much work to be done internationally, nationally, and at the state level to mitigate the impacts of climate change. But I live in this community, and I want our community to step up to the challenge. Thanks again to Ed and the planning staff for a job well done.
Thank you, Brian. Reminder that we're at the public hearing on the comprehensive plan. Joanne Shapola-Dennis, please.
Hi, thanks for having this hearing on the comprehensive plan. As you see, I still have my snow pants on, and I feel like I'm about six, but I'm going to stand here anyway. So I'm in favor of the comprehensive plan. I'd like you to pass it, and I encourage you to pass it strongly and encourage you to actually increase the goals to combat climate change through the gas emissions. I didn't read the entire thing, and I'm uncertain if methane is a part of that, but I'd like to see a reduction of methane, the other greenhouse gas we often leave out. Some of you know that I built a round structure, which is the safest structure you can build. That's why the Nomads started out with it. That's why we use silos to have food and to have our fuel and our water. We use those objects because the wind goes around those objects and over them rather than destroying them with a push. And we have to accommodate for that now that we are living in climate change events. I'm concerned that the building codes are not adequate enough for snow loads that we are facing right here and now, and that our infrastructure really is failing. So if we could add a little bit of emphasis to those things. As I said, you know, I come in here and I talk about climate change a lot. It's really the most important thing that we have to address. So I'm really proud of Tompkins County and their leadership and to Ed Marks and his team for making such a comprehensive plan and coming in here and speaking to you about how we have to stick by it. So my concern is not having so much the great plan, because I think that you're going to pass it, but to actually stick to it once it's done. So I would appreciate it if you would use a little emphasis on sticking to the things. I noticed at the end it said a lot about the safety of the community and the health of this community. And that is something that we really need to think about deeply, because when people are afraid to come out of their house, then our community is prevented and denied from thriving, because they don't take part in things. They don't come here to speak to you. Then you don't know really how they feel. So putting those things in our comprehensive plan might be a good idea. And some of those things might be like equality in jobs and living wages. And we can do that through renewable energy while we reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. I was part of Solarize Tompkins SE, which created a lot of living wage full-time jobs, and I was on the steering committee for that, and we required them to say whether they adhered to same gender rights, whether their marriage rights were something that they supported, and whether they had health care. Some businesses in Tompkins County, because they're not headquartered in New York State, do not pay those types of things. So we ought to think about that going forward, and maybe even withhold a building permit if they're going to discriminate. So those are the things that I'd like you to consider going forward. And maybe each project that comes up should be required to go by NEPA, which is the National Environmental Protection Act, which new projects have to go by in the federal government. They have to actually calculate what their effect is on climate change, and I'd like to see that going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Deborah Cipolla-Dennis.
Hi, my name is Deborah Cipolla-Dennis, and I'm from Dryden. I find the most important thing about the 2015 Comprehensive Plan as the part that we, Tompkins County, play in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. It's been a really cold February, and there's a ton of snow on the ground out there, I think more than I've ever seen since I've lived here. There's even more snow in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, where they've been pummeled by storm after storm this year. Weather patterns are changing and causing extreme conditions all over the world, from the warmest winter in Alaska's history to a record-breaking number of forest fires in the West. 2014 was a year of climate chaos, and the six weeks into 2015 looks about the same, with record-breaking cold temperatures in the Northeast, the Northeast U.S., and a non-existent wet season causing crippling droughts in South America and Brazil. Tompkins County residents have a reputation of taking action on matters of importance, and I can think of no more pressing issue than climate change. It's our responsibility to take action locally to stop feeding the climate chaos machine. Therefore, I strongly support the goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 80% by 2050. It's important that we stay true to this commitment and follow through with it, not just say it. In fact, I think we should be doing this by 2030 or 2035 instead of 2050. It's imperative that we make this our county's guiding principle and consider it in all laws and policies going forward. We must consider energy policies when planning and implementing new development and issuing building permits. We cannot afford to continue with the short-sighted decision-making that compromises our future. Local energy demands can be reduced by continuing to invest in distributed renewable projects. This is more than just solar panels on a roof. It's creating ways that can have community, so that we can have community net metering and utilizing our air and ground source heat pumps, among other types of green systems documented and presented by the Sustainable Tompkins Alternatives Project. Please make sure that you take time to see their presentation if you have not already. There will be one in Dryden on this Thursday at 6 p.m. And they're getting pretty good at it. They've done it several times now. We can't continue doing the same things just because we're intimidated by new technology or uncomfortable with change. 2050 will be here before you know it, and I, for one, want to be able to tell the future generations of this world that we took action when it mattered. For all these reasons, I urge you to maintain the energy and greenhouse gas emissions chapter in the 2015 Comprehensive Plan and pass it as is. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Nick Goldsmith.
Thank you. My name is Nick Goldsmith. I work as sustainability coordinator with the City of Ithaca and the Town of Ithaca. I have very brief comments focusing pretty narrowly on the energy and sustainability elements of the comprehensive plan draft. In short, I fully support the plan. I've seen various incarnations of it from Katie and Ed at Tompkins County Climate Protection Initiative meetings and along the way. And in my role with the city and the town, and previously working with the town of Dryden, I'm tasked with both producing and implementing plans to reduce energy use, reduce energy costs, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And always I found the county plans, the previous comprehensive plan, this current draft, as well as the energy strategy, which has been mentioned a few times tonight. These plans on the county level have been extremely helpful to the municipalities, and specifically in my role in implementing our plan, it's nice to have the backing of the county, and it's nice to have the strong goals set forth in the county plans. I'm really in favor of the 80% by 2050 goal, which so many communities and organizations have dedicated themselves to. I would actually like to see on a municipal level and a county level a stronger goal of carbon neutrality by 2050 or even sooner. Cornell just revved up their deadline to 2035 for carbon neutrality. So in general, I fully support the plan, find it's going to be very helpful, and appreciate the hard work that the staff has put into it. And for the next time around, I think we can start looking at maybe even more ambitious climate targets. But thanks for all the work so far.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to comment on the comprehensive plan? Please step to the microphone. Say your name and where you're from. We can hear you. Excuse me, I don't think they're getting the sound off that microphone. Jim, could you check it? Thank you for accommodating that.
Hi. Just say it for the record again or something?
Go ahead, start okay. Again.
I'm Sue Cosentini. I'm a builder and a developer in the area, and I'm also on the Planning Advisory Board. And I am just here to endorse the comp plan. I think it's well composed, well considered, well thought out, well researched. And I, for one, am definitely aligned, obviously, with all the climate goals in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. I think that we can really push that agenda for sure amongst many of the others in the plan. And I think now just getting word out is, you know, the mission at this point, get it out in an effective manner. Thank you.
Thank you, and sorry for the trouble with the microphone. Anyone else like to speak on the comprehensive plan? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close the public hearing. And I'm going to open the regular meeting of the board. Would you please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Call, have the roll call of members, please.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
I'm present.
Ms. Herrera will be arriving later this evening. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler has asked to be excused. Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
12 members present.
We have quorum. Before we go any further, I would like to take a minute and welcome the new member from District 9 to our legislature. Glenn Morey was elected in the special election on February 10th. Pardon me. And his election was certified by the Commissioners of Election today. And so he's taken the oath of office just before this meeting, and so he's with us as a full-fledged member. Glenn, congratulations on your win, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much.
Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'm not aware of a need for an executive session tonight. Jonathan or Joe?
No
executive session. Let's move to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity for the public to speak to the legislature for up to 3 minutes on any topic. We ask if a person wants to speak, please fill out one of the blue cards in the back and send it forward. And we will have the count clock on to my left over there, which will count down 3 minutes. At the end of the 3 minutes, which is the time allotment, there will be an audible signal. Sounds like a telephone ring, and we ask that you conclude at that point. When you agree to speak on privilege of the floor, you're agreeing to the three-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor, and you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. I have a card from Sherry Corthias.
Hi there. Oh, my, it is working now. Sorry. Hi. I'm Sherry Corthias, and I'm speaking tonight. First of all, I want to thank Legislator Kiefer for requesting extra information on the county jail, the better reporting and statistics. And I want to talk about, as a taxpayer and citizen of Thompson's County, I really don't like my taxes being used to expand the jail, and I know that you guys heard from me before, but tonight the bids, I think, are up for a vote, and it came out to $730,119, with $607,000 of it being the metal building that will be their new indoor recreation, from what I understand. But what I want to make sure is, since they're out of taxes and out of a bond issue, does this include the markups of 10%, your contingency markup, and your soft costs? And then, you know, Brian Robeson was quite instrumental in getting it, this jail expansion approved, and now he works like he was incident commander at that SWAT team they had in Danby. So I have an issue with that. And then LaBella Associates, we paid them, what, $90,000 to do the architecture. And I have this copy for you guys, if somebody will take it. I'm sorry. And I have I want to make sure, because in there it says that we're supposed to, the programs cannot be eliminated. And so they cannot eliminate a program. It has to be another program in place. And so what's going to replace the indoor recreation, where they're going to put 7 beds and 8 new seats, and then the metal building is going to block the sunlight that the ones that are in the jail get sunlight from. And so I have a lot of issues, and I would just wish you guys would hold off maybe voting on that tonight and look more into it, because I just don't think it's a good way with this comprehensive plan. I think it's very important as a community we come together, because we're going to need to come together, and this jail expansion just isn't the best for us. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Sherry. Joanne Shapola-Dennis.
Hi. Mr. Morey, congratulations. I see you sitting there. Thanks. So I ditto what Sherry said about the expansion. And you know that I was opposed to it, as about 100 people were every time they came in here last year to oppose it, and you passed it anyway. My concern as a corrections officer was that you were going to take away the only indoor recreation they had without replacing it, and that they would have a choice to stay in their cell, be in a hallway, or face wind chills below zero to go outside, which they are not prepared for, and they're not given the type of clothing that they need to do that. How is that a safe community that we just voted on in the comprehensive plan? I would really like you to think clearly about this decision, and I really thank the 3 members of this legislature who opposed that, were Leslie McBean Claiborne, Carol Chalk, and Kathy Liz Herrera. The rest of you voted it through. Secondly, I agree with Mr. Donald Mintz from Trumansburg, who says no excuse for police destroying Danby's home. If you, the militarized police, have to expect the police to act as like the military. So it is disturbing but not surprising that Tompkins County Sheriff confused Danby with Afghanistan in a vast excess of zeal. Used heavy military-type equipment to destroy a Danby home. The county now owes the owner full value of that house, and as you know, his insurance is not going to pay it, and the tenant a decent place to live, which she was here. She's homeless now, and her 2 sons are with her. And the sheriff owes us all a letter of resignation. And Sheriff Lansing, I know that you're watching from your house at home in the comfort, probably having a few margaritas, but I really want you to resign. And if you don't resign, I had a letter from the AG who we sent in with 139 signatures that I got in 2 hours, and I have a response that they are going to forward their correspondence to the Public Integrity Bureau, and they will contact you. So until that happens and until this independent investigation takes place, we are living with a sheriff who condones his own behavior and then takes no responsibility for it and then blames the other cops that were showing up. I really would like this legislature to take action against Sheriff Lansing and remove him without pay until this investigation is concluded. Thanks.
Thank you. That's all the cards I have. Anyone else who wanted to speak would need to send up a card. Privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I don't think I see it. So let's turn to privilege of the floor for legislators. Who'd like to speak? Martha Robertson and Carol Chalk.
Two things. One is, folks in our red folders on the left are some comments that I guess came in about the comprehensive plan over through the website. So take a look there. And I want to, as the chair of the committee that oversees tourism, I want to just highlight something that adorable, I think. When I first heard about it, I thought, oh, no, what did they do? But the tourism, Bruce Stoff and the Convention and Visitor Center, visitithaca.com, run by the Ithaca Convention and Visitors Bureau, recently added a pop-up window to its site. I'm reading from the Huffington Post about Winter You Win. Ithaca Tourism Bureau urges travelers to visit the Florida Keys instead. That's it. We surrender. Winter You Win. And it says, telling visitors that due to this ridiculously stupid weather, they should consider foregoing a trip to Ithaca, where sub-zero temperatures are expected this week. Instead, go to the Florida Keys. And Bruce Stoff says, we're done with, on behalf of 100 million Northeasterners, we're saying we're done with cold and snow. Now, I thought, oh, I can't believe they're telling people to go away. But guess what? They have tens of thousands of hits on the website today. It was on NPR tonight. It's on Huffington Post. Who knows where else it is? That all over cable news,
CNN.
So I guess we should thank the Ithaca the Convention and Visitors Bureau for their sense of humor and for once again showing this community doesn't take itself too seriously, but you know, and then it turns out we've been rewarded by quite a bit of attention. And I imagine people, after they get too hot in Florida this summer, they'll come up here. So thanks and congratulations to Bruce and the Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Carol Chalk.
Yeah, well, yeah, I've raised my hand for kudos to two entities, and the first was Bruce Stoff. CNN was the other place that I saw it. And but I have suggestions to follow this to keep it going. And one is that he should follow it in a week or two with it's safe now to come here. Please, you know, stop going away other places. Certainly a request from Florida to send residents north in the other three wonderful seasons here. Maybe a poll. We can do a poll. Are you a Dorothy-ite, never surrender to the Wicked Witch of the North? Like some of us, or are you, have you surrendered like me years ago and take your vacation every winter rather than the summer here? I think it might depend on whether you ski. Now that I can't ski anymore, it's really changed my own appreciation for winter. And then listening to the comments tonight on the comprehensive plan, I came up with a few more. So This is why we're among the top climate activist counties in the nation. Please join us. Maybe every day a link, one day to TICPE, the next day to 350.org, the next day to our own campaign for renewable energy. We've got a long list here, and we've been really active, so maybe we should. It's good timing to think about highlighting that on our Visit Ithaca site. And then I just also wanted to mention and thank, in a more serious note, the city water department, and I don't know if it was road crews as well, who were out there on South Hill the other night. There was a water main break. They were out there. The temperature itself was below zero, and then the wind chill made it something like minus 19, and they were out there up to their hips in water. The bad news probably on this is that it was not a frozen pipe. This was this is something more serious and ongoing. It's infrastructure decay. And there's serious problems, and we've got serious budget problems to fix infrastructure in at all locations of the county now. So thank you to those crews.
Will Burbank.
Thank you, Ray. I, too, was going to mention this very the wonderful little campaign that the Convention of Visitors Bureau kicked off, and this kind of wonderful exposure. But I have to say, you know, when we say we give up, or you win, winter, we can say that, but the reality is that winter is really, really different. We heard tonight people talking about the kind of snow we're seeing we have not seen for many, many years. It is very, very strange. I talked today, I was buying something, I was talking to a gentleman out in Utah where they have essentially no winter. It's just the exact opposite. The normal thing that's happening is abnormal weather. And while we can fantasize flying off to better weather, and some of us actually have the ability to do it, tonight we heard people talking about our need to really seriously address the underlying problem. And I want to applaud all the people that came out on this cold night and thank them for doing that. Finally, one more tourism thing. This is the winter break for schools. And historically, or in recent years, the CVB has done a very, very wonderful program for teachers, inviting them to come to Ithaca and explore our wonderful resources. They decided that that particular program was a little too much work for them, so they said, does anybody else want to do it? And fortunately, downtown Ithaca picked it up, and if you are a teacher or if you work in the schools in any capacity or know somebody in your family who does, by all means, go down to the Visitors Bureau there, pick up your little pass, and go out in the cold and enjoy Ithaca. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Jim Dennis.
Thank you. While everyone is reveling in what the CVB did with and got ourselves national attention, let me just mention that there are some people who are unhappy with this. Cortland County, for example, operates a ski lodge, and Greek Peak took a good deal of local or taxpayer money to get that place rehabbed and hopefully turn it into a profitable thing. I know many people here don't care about snowmobiles and things like that, but clearly that's something that's an occupation there and a moneymaker for Cortland County. My mother always said to me when I was running for office that there's no such thing as bad publicity as long as they spell your name right. And everything that I saw on TV this morning and on my phone, it was spelled right. They had Ithaca spelled right. And I think those teachers who can afford it are probably in Key West. They're not here. But and the other thing I wanted to mention in a more serious vein, I heard someone say here at this microphone that the county legislature should do something with Sheriff Lansing. The county legislature can't do anything with any sheriff. other than make a budget that we hand to the sheriff, whoever it may be, and they operate their budget. They operate the jail and they operate the road patrol. They're independently elected people, and if you don't like them, just like us, you can go out there, get names, get a recall vote, and people can have at it. So I would hope that no one is holding their breath waiting for the county legislature to do something with the sheriff or any other elected official. If you don't like what they do, then get yourself a new one. And, you know, that would be my answer. Because what concerns me is when people come here and say to us, I want you to do something, you know, that's not our job. We did not elect him. The public elected him. And this one, the last one, the one before that. So you do what you have to do when you get to the polls.
Jim, I don't think we have a recall process in New York.
I'm sorry about that, I guess. So
less than being clairvoyant.
They're stuck then.
Less than being clairvoyant.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to read a little something as part of an announcement. There's a growing statewide movement to halt solitary confinement, and I'm sure many of you in this room have been following that. The Halt Solitary Confinement Act, Bill 44-01 in the Assembly, 2649 in the Senate, New York State Senate, would ban solitary beyond 15 days under whatever name, administrative punishment, or other segregation, as well as banning its use on the mentally ill and pregnant women. We need to raise awareness of this legislation and encourage our policymakers to pass it. I wanted to read that to say to folks that tomorrow there's a panel discussion occurring at GIAC tomorrow, February 18th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. The members of this group who are involved in trying to with this movement. And so I want to encourage those of you in the room, those of you watching, to attend this discussion. Some of the stories I've heard with people in solitary confinement, as we all know, have just been brutal and heart-wrenching. So this is happening tomorrow, and I just wanted to make that announcement and encourage as many people as can attend to attend and join the movement. The other thing, and maybe I missed my turn during the public hearing, but haven't heard everything folks said, I do want to commend the planning department on a job well done with the comprehensive plan. I'm sure there are many parts of it that, you know, we always find things at some point on the line we haven't thought about or a community haven't thought about. But what I did appreciate is how much time they spent going out into the community and getting comments and getting feedback from as many people in different walks of life as possible. And to me, that is the kind of template I hope that we can duplicate and share with our colleagues in other municipalities as well for anything of this nature. So kudos to the planning department on a well done process.
Thank you. Martha, anyone else wants to speak? Martha'd like another turn. Let's take Peter first.
I would just like to voice a pet peeve of mine. I want to correct something that Jim said when he said that the sheriff was elected by the people. The sheriff was not elected by the people. There was no election. The sheriff just walked into that office because no one chose to run against him. He ran.
There was an election.
I'm sorry.
People voted for him. That's
and there
not
were
true.
Write-ins.
People wrote in.
It was in no sense a meaningful election.
It was not a contested election.
It was not a contested election.
The first one was.
And may I speak without being?
You have the floor.
It may not be a popular view, but it's my view, and I think I want to say it. I think, congratulations to the gentleman sitting opposite me. He was elected. There were two candidates, and they ran healthy races, and one won. He won, and here he is, okay? And that's the way it ought to be. But I think that the rest of the people in this room, very few of them had such an experience at the last election. I know I didn't. And I think most of the people who did come into office. And I feel that's bad. I think the basis of our government is democracy. We talk about it all the time. We talk about it in the public schools, that the people choose. But in fact, that's more not true in local government than it's true. And I wish, even though if I had to run against somebody, it would be a whole lot harder, and I'd have to be out walking the streets much longer and raising money and so forth. But it was sort of nice and cushy just to sit back and have another term. But I think it's a bad advertisement for our form of government. So that's what I wanted to say.
Thank you. Martha? Oh, I'm sorry. Dave hasn't spoken yet. Dave McKenna.
Martha was ahead of me.
No, go ahead.
Sorry?
Okay. I'd just like to throw my personal thanks to Glenn for running and for winning and putting a little more weight on my side of the aisle. Appreciate it very much. Welcome aboard.
Anyone else before I go back to Martha? Martha?
All right. Peter, I would just point out that the sheriff's first election was very much contested. So
it was indeed.
I just want to shout out to the snowplow drivers who've been keeping us safe and at all hours of night and et cetera. And it was, I actually heard a story on the radio about the derision that snowplow drivers are getting in Boston. And I understand people are really frustrated when they shovel their driveway and the plow comes along and they have to shovel again. But it was awful to hear about people, you know, shouting and giving the finger to snowplow drivers who I'm sure would rather be doing other things themselves. It's dangerous. It's hard. They're long, long hours. A couple times this week I was on my own road with the dog and plow came along and they were very, very careful to make sure they went around me. And, you know, it's really tough work and I really want to appreciate that they do it at all crazy hours of the night and thank them for that.
Carol?
Yeah, well, I wanted to welcome Glenn as well, but I just want to make sure that we welcome him correctly and point out, I appreciate that we have a bipartisan legislature here. I think it's important to have all views represented. But I also want to point out that we hardly have any votes that operate along partisan lines. We really work together well here and vote from our hearts across party lines. Many of our votes are unanimous. We've come to some consensus. I think the exception, as I've observed over the time I've spent here, have been those where we're weighing in on big national or sometimes state issues fall along partisan lines, things that we don't really control but can weigh in on. Other than that, it's very rare that our votes happen to fall that way. So I just wanted to start you off on the right foot, Glenn. And
thanks.
I'm happy to get together anytime and argue politics,
thank you,
both
Carol.
Either local or national.
Thank you, Carol. I'd like to chime in also. Martha, thank you for making that comment about our snowplow drivers. Carol, thank you for making the comment about the city crews. Who I can't think of a more miserable job than be out there in zero-degree weather than trying to do a water main repair, except possibly to try to fight a house fire, as was happening with our firefighters in Groton last night as well. The police have to go out on these awful roads. The tow truck drivers have to go out on these awful roads and try to be safe out there in little traction. When it gets this cold, the salt doesn't work. The roads become snow-covered. And whether it's state crews or county crews or towns or villages or city, they work. They don't probably have as much sleep as they ought to have because they have to be out there for the public safety. I think we want to thank all of the people involved in these kind of regular seemingly irregular but regular emergencies that we have. I don't have any particular report tonight. I do have some appointments I'd like to make to the Tompkins County Development Board of Directors, Tompkins County Area Development Board of Directors, Jim Dennis. To the Chamber of Commerce, myself, that's a designated seat by the Chamber bylaws for the chair of the legislature, and Jim Dennis is the alternate. To the Extension Service, Will Burbank and Dave McKenna. To the Local Advisory Board on Assessment Review, and Caroline Danby, that's Dan Klein, Newfield Enfield, Dave McKenna, Groton, Glenn Morey, Dryden, myself, and Martha Robertson. To the Town of Ithaca, Will Burbank, Dooley Kiefer, and Peter Stein. To Lansing, Mike Sigler and Dooley Kiefer. To Ulysses, James Dennis. To the City of Ithaca, Carol Chalk, Kathy Luz Herrera, and Leslyn McBean Claiborne. Then to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, the chair will be Leslyn McBean Claiborne. To the Ethics Advisory Board, Chair Dooley Kiefer. To the Ithaca Metropolitan Planning Organization, Dooley Kiefer, with myself as alternate. And the Special Negotiating Committee for Collective Bargaining Negotiations, reaffirming for 2015, Jim Dennis, Peter Stein, Deb Prado, and Joe Mariana. See any other staff people that were needed to be recognized tonight?
Mike?
Yes.
Did you want to turn that piece of paper over?
I don't think we actually have to do those, Dooley, because
fine.
They're ongoing.
Okay.
That you're talking about the vet school incinerator project and the mega.
Yeah.
They're ongoing appointments.
Thank you.
I can point out that Dooley is the ongoing delegate, and Beverly Livesey is the alternate, and on mega it's Mike Stamm. Are there resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? And I think I skipped our most important part of the meeting. We have to hear from our administrator, attorney, and finance director. Our county administrator is Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Michael. Short agenda, short report tonight. Just a couple of updates. I keep bringing back to you Energize New York as kind of a continuing topic of interest. We had a really good, I think, last due diligence meeting last week. Planning Department arranged for Joe Del Sindico, who is the head of this operation, who ought to be a resident by now, to fully brief city and county and community on what this program means. You recall that this is a way to extend long-term low-interest loans to non-residential properties and to collect those loans through the line item on the property tax bill, which gives those loans security, which makes them affordable and long-term and so forth. I will tell you, I believe that the result of that was we still haven't found any reasons not to move forward. We keep digging deeper into the details. I think we've been satisfied with every response we've gotten. So it's our intent to bring you a local law soon that will allow us to enter into this arrangement and for us to begin making these loans available for owners in this community very soon. We're asking Energize New York for a template for that local law. That's all we're waiting for right now. So we will bring that forward. We will have a public hearing. When that public hearing ends, presuming everything checks out still, we will ask you to pass a local law, and we will be in business with this important program. We spent a lot of time tonight talking about the comprehensive plan, and a part of that talking about the need for new approaches to energy. This is a very large development in terms of the energy conservation element of the new generation of energy. I think this is going to be really important, so we do appreciate you staying involved in this, and we'll be back soon with legislation. Climate survey, Leslie and I are trying to figure out who's going to say what on climate survey. Maybe we'll get you at the beginning of the end. Please fill it out. legislators. You're welcome to participate in the survey. If you did not get an email with the passwords and everything to get on, let us know, and we will get that to you. You have until Friday, end of business Friday, to get your responses in. We're encouraging all county employees, and you know there's been an active campaign, to fill out the surveys because this information is very helpful to us as an organization. So, again, Friday is the deadline for submissions. Last thing I'll put on my list, the circuit breaker. Again, this is a recurring theme. My goal is to get you information that explains this in a way that we can explain to the citizens who will be a part of this. And the deeper we dig into this, the more complicated it is. I think we've figured out the three-year, it's a three-year phase-in. It's a graduated benefit. I think we've got the arithmetic down. I don't know that it's ever going to be that easy to explain to constituents. My hope is by the end of this week, probably early next week, to get you some paper that will explain it as well as we are able to explain it, in the hope that we can explain it to the constituents of yours. So that's still a work in progress. And that's my list. I did have on my list, too, the appreciation for the people that are working outside. I'm glad to hear everybody saying that. It was on my list, so I do want to just echo what you've said. It is the snowplow drivers. It's the guys who work for facilities who are up on the roof with a lot of snow, repairing leaks, fixing pipes and things like that in the very cold weather. So I'm glad that we are recognizing them. They're doing a great job. And that's my report.
Questions for Joe. Leslin, did you have your hand up?
I did not have my hand up, but I'll say one quick thing just as an addition to what you said, Joe, is not to... Also, remember our TCAD drivers who have been getting people to work despite this mess that's out there. So big kudos to them and thanks.
Absolutely. Then let's go next to Jonathan Wood, our county attorney.
Excuse me.
Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you. Wanted to update you all on the solar project at the airport. As you, I'm sure, recall, we got a NYSERDA grant to work with Solar City and the City of Ithaca to put a 2-megawatt solar array on the, at the airport. This week we signed a lease with the city and we signed an agreement with the company. The only difference from what we talked about is the company agreed to pass a little more money than we previously talked about. So instead of, I believe when I talked about it last time, it was about $13,500 we get a year. It's up to about $16,500, but the project remains the same. Over the next couple months, we'll need to get approval from the FAA, go through the SEGR process, but we expect to start work in May. It'll probably be completed in July. And we could be online as soon as then, but probably more likely in the fall. And hopefully we'll have some more projects in the near future.
Questions for John? Thank you, John.
Can you just say the size of the array again?
The size of the array is 2 megawatts, but physically that's just under 10 acres. And in terms of... generation, it's about 2.7 million kilowatts a year, which is big.
Thank you.
I assume that's about the same size as the project that was been put in at TC3?
It's very close in size.
Let's go to our finance director, Rick Snyder.
I have no formal report tonight, but I would just like to attest to the fact that people from Tampa Bay and Florida are moving here. I'm the first of a wave, I believe, of people that will be coming here from Tampa Bay, Florida, and vacationing here also. So I just wanted to put in that good word.
Thank you. Questions for Rick? Okay, let's go to the consent agenda. Appointments I have from the advisory boards are Economic Development Committee, the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, David G. Blake, the Local Zone Administration Board, Gene McFeeters, and Carl Haynes. From Health and Human Services Committee, for the Recreation Partnership, Will Burbank. To the Greater Ithaca Activities Center Board, Kathy Luz Herrera. From the Public Safety Committee, for the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, David Bond. To the Stop DWI Advisory Board, Carol Chalk. To the Criminal Justice Advisory Alternatives to Incarceration Board, Martha Robertson. To the Traffic Safety Committee, Carol Chalk, Nathan Shinagawa, and Will Burbank. We also have some resolutions on the consent agenda. If anyone wants to talk about them, just say you'd like to have it off the consent agenda. Yep.
I have a report. There's one that I was going to think maybe a mistake. Does that need to be pulled to discuss, or do you just want to go ahead?
Okay. Do you want? Why don't you tell us what one you think is incorrect?
Where I did not call to be on partnership.
All right. Well, let's pull that for now. Then.
I think both of those could be pulled.
We'll bring. And what's the other one?
I just want to verify about the GAC board.
Okay. Well, we'll pull those two appointments then.
Oh, wait. I didn't get my question answered about when the Stop DWI Advisory Board or the Traffic Safety Committee meet. I'll make sure I can accept those.
Well, should we pull that one as well?
Well, unless somebody can tell me when they meet.
The Traffic Safety Committee is about half an hour before the, what, May Public Safety Committee meet? What?
Once a year. Oh, okay.
Okay.
We'll
leave that one on then. All right, let's go to the resolutions. Out of the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, ID 5411, authorizing Federal Transit Administration, Section 5311, Rural Application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit, Inc., and Tompkins County for 2015-2016. Out of the Public Safety Committee, Resolution B, ID 50.
Off.
Out of, then we'll go to Resolution C, ID 5352, Budget Adjustment, Supervision, and Treatment Services for Juveniles Program, STSJP, Department of Probation and Community Justice. Resolution D, ID 5341, authorization to accept New York State Child Passenger Seat Grant. Out of Health and Human Services, Resolution E, ID 5369, grant acceptance and budget adjustment for the Tompkins County Transition Support Program, Office of the Aging. Out of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution F, ID 50. Resolution G, ID. Resolution H, 5379, authorization to execute construction funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation, Covered Bridge Preservation Project. Resolution I, ID 5378, award of bid, Covered Bridge Preservation Project, Town of Newfield. Resolution J, ID 5377, authorization to accept a grant from New York State Pollution Prevention Institute for Waste Reduction Project. So we pulled Resolution B, Resolution F, and Resolution G. And we pulled the two appointments. For the rest of the appointments and the rest of the resolutions, do I have a motion? Excuse me.
You can include the Stop DWI Advisory Board with thanks to Kathy Covert. Okay. No, I mean, you can keep it on. I'm happy to accept.
But I thought we, there were
different
two.
Different from the...
We pulled. There were two we pulled.
No, and the Traffic Safety Committee, if it meets before public safety, then that's at a time that I can meet as well. So thank you.
She was on for two. She said yes to one and said she'll wait about the stuff.
I was thinking there was another one that Will wanted.
Will and Kathy for GIAC and REC partnership.
All right.
Carol's okay for both.
Okay, so there's just one that we're pulling, and that's Will's.
And Kathy.
And Kathy, sorry. Is there any other discussion on the consent agenda motion? I guess I need a motion, please. Will, seconded by Martha. All in favor of the consent agenda as modified, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Dave, I wondered if we could go to facilities at this point and take those resolutions, at least those resolutions that you have in your report, if you have one.
Okay. We have resolution ID number 5384, authorization to accept a supplemental agreement with Delta Engineers for bridge replacement design services, Waterburg Road, County Road 136, bridge over Tagannick Creek.
Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion, Dooley, you asked for it to be off?
I asked for it to be off only because, as I read the memo that's attached to it, it specifies what the additional services to be performed are, and that to me said that in line 15 it should say were additional design and right-of-way services. Right-of-way was left out of the resolution, so that's why I pulled it off.
Is that friendly? Dave?
Yes.
Is that friendly with the seconder? Kathy? All right. Anything else on that? Anyone else wants to speak on that motion, or that resolution, rather? Ready to vote. All those in favor, as modified, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Dave, could you take G?
Okay. Then we have resolution 5381, authorization to execute a construction services supplemental agreement, Fisher Associates, CR 110 Ellis Hollow Road, Phase 2 Reconstruction, Town of Dryden.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha Robertson. Dooley?
Dooley had a question.
Yes, I pulled that because, again, when I read the memo, it indicates, and the memo could be wrong, I suppose, but the memo indicates under background that one end of this phase is approximately 300 feet east of Dodge Road. That's in the background portion. But line 13 says 500 feet. So I just wanted to make sure the distance was correct.
Are you asking for a modification?
I assume that the memo is correct, and therefore the resolution should match the memo. But I'm not on the committee, so I'm not 100% sure.
Can anyone clarify that?
I can't clarify it.
How about we expect it to go 300, but we're hoping it'll go to 5?
Could we leave it for staff to fill in the correct number after it's checked?
I think that's a reasonable suggestion. Is that all right with everyone?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So can we anything else before we vote on that? All those in favor with that understanding, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Dave, I think you have Resolution J.
Resolution J, ID 5392, award of bid, Tompkins County Jail Modifications Project.
Is there a second?
I so move.
Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion. This is the award of bids. Dan?
Yeah, I just want to address one thing that was said during a privilege of the floor. One or two speakers said or implied that we were eliminating indoor recreation area, that it was only the outside and the wind and such. That's not true. The recreation area is an indoor-outdoor recreation area. And it's actually, I would consider, an upgrade from what's there now, which is only an indoor recreation area most days.
Thank you. Dooley?
This is a small question. I'm looking at the resolution. I'm looking at line 25, and it refers to entering into contracts with the successful contractors. I think we usually would say with the successful bidders, and I would suggest that substitution of word bidders for contractors.
Is that friendly?
It's friendly.
Friendly to the seconder?
Okay.
Thank you. Again, Martha, then Jim.
I don't know if there was any conversation about prevailing wage from these contractors. Is our threshold is $1 million for a county project? Arell's nodding. But I see this is less than that, but I wondered if there was any conversation about about the these bids?
I don't think
they have to pay, just to clarify, they have to pay prevailing wage on every public works project. The million threshold is for the apprenticeship program.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Jim?
Joe, I just want to ask, how did this project figure out in terms of what we, how much we had in the project, and where did this fall in terms of the bidding process?
It fell just about exactly where it needed to be. It's a little bit under budget. Earlier, someone talked about the total project cost. This is the construction element of the project. There are other soft costs. I think the total budget was 900. So we are right in line with what the design estimate was.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Are we ready to vote? Carol?
Yeah, I want to thank the people who worked very hard to try to make this a better project. I continue to believe in my heart of hearts that if we build them, they will come, and I just cannot support any expansion of beds in our jail.
Ready to vote? May we have a roll call, please?
Ms. Jack?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ten ayes, three noes.
That passes. Dave, did you want to make any kind of report, or are you done?
I think that just about covers it, because that is the crux of what we did.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's go back to the top of the order. Take the Economic Development Committee. Martha Robertson is our chair.
Thank you, Mike. We met on February 11th and had a couple of lively discussions. I've got the resolution on the IDA appointments. One of the discussions was about the $1.5 billion competition that the governor is putting out there. Of course, it still has to be passed by the legislature. Some people may forget that and not realize that he can't just make it happen. But so it's still kind of unclear. But it looks like the criteria, you may have heard about this, I'm sure you've heard about this, the $1.5 million competition among the seven upstate regions for economic development projects, and we had a little bit more information, though not a ton, but a little more information from Michael Stamm from TCAD. So we talked about what the criteria seem to be, and those include the proposal needs to be transformative, not the same as the regular regional council development CFA process. It can't be for infrastructure, can't be for public works, but they, you know, could be for training programs, could be for, it's unclear, it's still very unclear. But we had a lot of conversation about possibilities. Ed Marks participated in, because they've been thinking about this as well, looking at things in the Southern Tier cleaner, greener plan to try to bring some of those projects in. So that'll be a continuing conversation at the committee. We heard from Tom Knipe with the tourism program, and about they had done two kind of postmortems on projects that one didn't go so well after a short period of time, and the other closed after a much longer period of time. The Wine Center, the Finger Lakes Wine Center, and then the Ticket Center. So the Finger Lakes Wine Center was up for about 18 months, kind of struggled throughout, and so the report was kind of looking at what went wrong and looking for lessons learned in particular. If anybody wants the whole report, that I can certainly get you that. The sense was that there were, you know, a couple pieces of bad luck. It was undercapitalized at the beginning and ended up opening at the wrong time of year, so kind of got off to a bad start. Also didn't have the support of the Finger Lakes wineries for the most part, I think, kind of mostly being centered right on each of the lakes. But at any rate, it was a good lesson in how the tourism board needs to really ask hard questions that they need to avoid, and I think they've done this, avoid a culture that kind of just everybody cheerleads a project and there weren't enough people really asking hard enough questions. The ticket center, which had been sort of the joint ticketing program for all the arts organizations, which if you remember, started in the Clinton House, you know, with printed tickets that were like written out by hand pretty much, all the way through very complicated software programs. So it had been operating as a joint service for something like 17 years, and technology really passed it by, and we think, it seems the tourism board felt that there were some warning signs that weren't paid attention to early enough about service that wasn't working out for some of the theaters, for example, and it would have benefited from some closer supervision by the board there as well. I want to mention that both of these experiences kind of went south before Tom was on board. If you remember, the tourism program was essentially staffed by Stu Stein. I mean, sort of as the volunteer who kind of made things run on time, and with a lot of input, a lot of help from board members. But an all-volunteer board is really not the same as a professional staff person kind of watching how things are going. So the reports both were very honest and useful, and the discussions about these initiatives were very interesting and helpful. And I think that we have moved past this culture of just cheerleading things and not asking hard questions. And we have a staff person who's very good at making sure there's accountability. So I just thought that was an interesting part of our meeting that you might like to hear about. We talked about goals and calendar for the year, and since Mike Sigler wasn't there, we appointed him to everything. So, no, we did not. But that's sort of the summary of my report. And if there are no questions, I can go to the resolution.
Well, let's see if there are questions. Carol?
So, this issue of how do you make sure that you're overseeing the financial aspects of all of our boards has come up in a number of contexts, not only related to this board, but in much more serious ways than some of the others or organizations, and even for us on the legislature here. And I just wondered if there were any suggestions made, or if maybe Joe would, or Rick might have any, about how do we both obtain ourselves and provide better training to advisory board members and us as liaisons about how do you look at the finances? What do you ask? What are the right questions to ask? You don't want to sound too critical. You want to give people some leeway, but what are the warning signs? I'm not sure we get enough training on that. Is it any?
Can anyone answer a question?
Yeah.
Is this an answer to her, or is this Kathy?
If you're on the Health and Human Services listserv, throughout the year, sometimes several times a year, there are workshops and classes offered on how to be a better board member, things to consider in terms of vision for a board, and I think all of those are excellent training. I think earlier I got some opportunities to attend, and it was very helpful to me. I think those things bear repeating, though, and could probably be emphasized in this situation. We might even want to ask, you know, for a condensed or special presentation. I think it's a good point.
Peter?
Well, I'm hardly an expert. I mean, I'm not an expert at all, but it does seem to me that it's asking too much to think that something that goes on in the private sector always, I mean, never fails, that it always succeeds. It just doesn't happen that way. And you can always ask the question, hey, why did that company that opened that restaurant on Cuga Street fail? Who knows? They just do. And I think we may get, you know, we're in government, and in government it never fails. You have a new program, and pretty much it's on there forever. Until you decide yourself that it's not money well spent. So I don't think you can hear that these two programs failed, and therefore somebody made a mistake. It's not clear. It's just that it's often very hard to estimate the market and to decide how many people are going to come. The best of business plans don't work out.
Will, is this on this question that she had? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Will?
So, Peter, both these programs that were sort of hybrids, you know, the Ticket Center was done by a nonprofit to service other nonprofit entities, but with our help. The Wine Center had a big infusion of money from tourism money. And I think the lessons they were trying to grapple with was, for one thing, there was essentially the people that were deciding to grant the money were frequently also the people actually on the board actually doing it. And there wasn't sort of a division and sense of distance. There weren't key steps where people look back and said, okay, this seems to be heading south. Do we want to be putting more money into it or put the brakes on? And I hope we will have collectively learned from that. I just want to support Carol's broader sense, though. We all sit on advisory boards, some just as liaisons, some in decision-making capacity, and I frequently will be hit with a budget situation that you know, on paper looks good, but I don't know that I know enough to really, really understand it. And I too would appreciate some if a workshop or something where we can figure out what the red flags are, try to exercise our best responsibility.
Jim?
Thank you, Michael. If this meeting is going out in public, then I'm somewhat concerned about what I'm hearing. The fact that this legislature had been involved in many boards for many years and been liaison people and boards run successfully without training, and I'm not suggesting that it's not good to go through board training and things like that. There are some projects that the legislature has been involved with, a couple that have been spoken about here, maybe huge time did not have been here yet, and the people that were involved in the program missed a few key elements that almost every business succeeds at. And when you undercapitalize an operation and then a few other things don't fall into place, then you're doomed. And I think before we spend a lot of time kind of bisecting or dissecting these individual ones, I think we learn some things. We need to move on. But overall, I believe the legislature, through the years, have put people on boards in an advisory capacity, and they've done a better-than-average job in dealing with the money issues that happen on boards. So,
I'd like to get back to Martha for the resolution that you have, Martha, please.
Yeah, and just about that. I mean, there was no... I think both were thoughtful, useful exercises in making in looking back. And a lot of boards don't do that. To the STPB's credit, they did. And I think one of the things that happens is you take risks and not everything works out. If you don't, if we only supported things that were going to be sure bets, then I'm pretty sure they might not need our support. So there are going to be some things like this that didn't work out. The ticket center, I think, there were some wrinkles along the way, but honestly, this technology is such a different animal than it was when it was first started. So I think there's a lot more kind of institutional memory now and skill and accountability, thanks to staff. And I also kind of thought back to maybe some reluctance to have a county planning person be the staff person for STPB. Well, I think Tom Knipe has just, hit it out of the park. People are very, very pleased with the kind of accountability and due diligence he brings to this kind of project. So with that.
Take resolution K, please.
Appointments, this is docket number 5373, Appointments to Industrial Development Agency. I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor? Dooley? Just a second, Dooley.
I'll be voting no because I think it would be much better to have some variation in membership and not just reappoint folks.
I understand that. I felt that the folks had done a good job on that and were deserving of reappointment. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? We have one opposed. Thank you.
And the next meeting of ED is March 2nd, Monday.
Let's move to Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thanks, Mike. We have not met since our last meeting. Our next meeting will be 1 week from today, February 24th, 3:30 here in Legislative Chambers.
Any questions for Dan? Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Dooley Kiefer is our chair.
Yes. Well, we, as you all obviously know, we met before this meeting because Resolution A on the consent agenda passed. I have to show you something, though. I always have trouble with little legal notices, and this grant application for TCAT and the MPO needed to be advertised. And much to my astonishment, this was the small ad that was in the paper. Dwight did not try to purchase a full page, but the journal had all this space, so they gave him this space. I thought you'd be amused by that. We're meeting tomorrow at 3:30, and the main item on the agenda is the County Planning Department's work plan for the year.
Questions for Dooley? Thank you, Dooley. Let's go to charter review. We had a meeting, and we spent time talking about the financial procedures section of the charter. We began to question whether the detail in the charter is really necessary at that in the charter itself or whether it should be broader discussion in the charter and having more detail in the policy. We have not completed our discussion about that, and we will probably put that remainder of that discussion off until not our next meeting but the following meeting. That'll give our administrators a chance to take another look at it and our director of finance and county attorney and look at this issue of whether we need all of that particular detail in the charter itself. Remember, the charter is the Constitution. The policy is more like the regulations that we have. We will meet again on March 4th at 3 o'clock here in Chambers. It is 3 o'clock. On Wednesday. Any questions I can answer? All right, let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Thank you. You've all received an email from Kevin McGuire, which he is trying to set up the retreat meeting that we have when it's generally warmer. And it is at the end of April, and there are five or six or seven dates in there, April and May. There's actually a couple of Saturday dates in that also. So please respond to that. Obviously, in the past, we've tried to want to have everyone there. If we're missing a couple of people, we're missing a couple of people, but we would hope that everyone can try to make that. Our next meeting of the committee is Monday at 4 p.m. That is my report, unless there are questions.
Old Library Committee has no report. Public Safety Committee, Nathan Shinagawa is the chair.
Yes, the Public Safety Committee met last Tuesday, and we talked about a number of items. We did not talk about the jail statistics that Julie had asked the committee to look at, and we honestly don't think we'll be able to consider it probably until May. And the reason why is twofold. So we had an extensive discussion with the sheriff and the undersheriff about the incident in Danby, as well as body cameras. And so the sheriff has agreed that, let me start chronologically. So in March, we will be having a report from the undersheriff on the incident at Danby. And the committee will have a PowerPoint presentation with pictures that accompany it that will be displayed or presented during the committee meeting. There will also be a long narrative document that goes into detail about the incident, and that will also be made available to the committee, and I believe we plan on putting it in the agenda packets, right, Michelle? All right. And so, and that will be made available to the committee. That will also be posted online, too. And so we are trying to be as transparent as possible with this, because we think that's very important. And so we're probably going to dedicate the majority of that meeting outside of critical business items to that report, because I believe that it will take that amount of time. All right. So then in April, the sheriff has agreed to present a draft policy regarding body cameras. And so body cameras are there is a lot to body cameras that one has to consider. Obviously, there's the storage aspects of how it's stored, how the footage is recorded and put inside of onto servers in order to be stored, how law enforcement, how DAs, how defense attorneys can access that footage. There's considerations about privacy. And this is one thing that I didn't realize, right? I mean, when an officer is recording, right, what about the privacy of the person that they're recording to? All right, so then also in terms of handling this in terms of FOIA requests. So this is a very complex issue, and we really sincerely believe that we need to make sure that the policy questions are resolved before we purchase the technology, because the technology will very much be based on what is best from a policy perspective. So the sheriff has agreed that he will have a draft policy in April for us to review. And we hope to that way put it in the hands of legislators to see. We'll dedicate some time in May, in addition to looking at Dooley's report that she wanted us to consider. We also spend some time getting feedback from folks about that policy. And then in June, we hope to be able to pass that policy. So then we can go into the technological aspects of the body cameras. So that timeline, I hope, is clear, and the sheriff is very much on board with that timeline, and I hope that it's a timeline that he believes, in terms of the body cameras, will allow us to have body cameras by the end of the year, and maybe even sooner. Let's see, what else did the committee talk about? That was such the main focus of our meeting.
There was something about pedestrian safety.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so at our traffic safety meeting, we will be taking up the subject of pedestrian safety. It was brought up that that it appears anecdotally that pedestrians walking into streets without necessarily looking, especially in these weather conditions when one cannot stop immediately, it seems to be a growing problem anecdotally. And so therefore, we would like this to be discussed at the traffic safety meeting so we can see if there's anything we could do, whether it be awareness or enforcement actions, in order to bring greater awareness of this.
Okay.
What's that?
We've got some questions, I think. And if you're, are you done, Nathan?
Let me see. Let me just look. If there's anything else that I missed. And oh, yeah, of course. And then we also had a very detailed discussion about juvenile justice reform. And so you'll recall, or you know, that the governor has suggested that we move the age of somebody that's considered a juvenile up to 18. And currently in New York State, 16 and 17-year-olds can be tried as adults. And are tried as adults, and also put in jail like adults. And that makes us one of two states in the country that still does that. And so so philosophically, the probation directors and as well as I believe, as well as the, not I believe, but I know the will of our committee, we believe that this is a good thing to do to move the age up to 18. However, there are significant challenges with doing this. For example, by having 16 and 17-year-olds not going to the county jail but instead going to a detention facility, well, that means that we have to transport that individual to that detention facility, which is, you know, miles away. That requires an officer, so we have increased overtime costs. But then on top of that, we have to pay for that person to be in that detention facility. And so right now, in order to be in the county jail, it's approximately, what, like $80 a day, right? And when you have a juvenile in a detention facility, it's about $400 a day. And so that's a significant impact. And so Pat will be is putting together a resolution, or working with Joe to put together a resolution for the committee to consider that essentially says that we support this change to 18 years old, but we want the governor and the legislature to be aware of the financial impact on counties, and that we hope that they will be able to support us financially in making this change possible, which I know is somewhat wishful thinking, but we're at least going to ask it.
I would say that at NYSAC, this was a topic of considerable discussion, and they claim the state is going to take over these costs, but I think, as you're pointing out, they're across many different kinds of departments, from jails to probation to social services and all of those things, so it's important that they catch all of them if they're going to do it.
Right.
Got some questions. Are you done, Nathan?
I am
report?
Done.
Let me take some questions. Kathy Luz Herrera has been patient, and then I have Carol, then Jim, then Dan.
I've rarely been described as patient, but I like what the committee's doing, looking into body cameras, and I want to voice my support for that. I also can only imagine the ramifications in terms of record keeping or with my CSI years of experience watching TV, stuff about chain of custody and all kind of crazy things. I wonder if there hasn't been any suggestion to do a pilot program. I know in this community, a lot of times we learn from our experiences, and we're not ashamed to do that. And my worry is that we're going to trot out a policy that we hope is perfect, and we're going to have invested so much in getting it that we're going to be loath to change it, even if our experience is showing that maybe we need to. So I just wonder, I know that patience isn't my biggest virtue, like I've said, and I would really like to see it tried in a few places so we can figure out, as we're coming up with the policy, where we might come up with some roadblocks and obstacles. Mm-hmm. Just a suggestion. I'm sure it's been suggested by others.
Yeah, actually, I mean, that has not really been a suggestion. I mean, we've talked about trialing the technology, but not in terms of a full-fledged pilot program. I don't think that's really been discussed. So I think that's a great idea, Kathy, and definitely Thanks. Something we could talk about.
And I have a follow-up or two. One is about juveniles and solitary confinement. I may have missed this, and I apologize. I was in transition on the way over here. There's a talk on solitary confinement at GIAC this Wednesday. Leslin announced it. Okay. And there's some interesting ramifications for juveniles because, in effect, did she say this part? When you end up incarcerating a juvenile at a county facility, they're in effect, if not actually, in solitary because of the needs for segregation. So there's some unintended consequences on both sides of the proposed legislation, and I think this will give us, or change or whatever it is, give us some opportunities to think about it. And those that are interested in going to that talk, it would be great to have a report out here at the legislature because this is a movement across the country. Solitary isn't cost-effective, and I won't say it's arguable or debatable. It damages people.
Carol?
Actually, I'm looking at Jonathan's face and wondering if he wanted to say something first.
We don't ever have just to be clear, we don't ever have juveniles at our jail. They may be in other places, but not at our jail.
What happens when we get juveniles?
Well, that's part of the problem. I mean, they have to be in an approved juvenile detention facility, and part of the problem is in cost is that there just aren't enough of them, and they aren't close enough around, and several that have been local have closed over the years. So we often end up transporting juveniles a long distance, which, of course, creates all kinds of problems in addition to the cost. But the cost is like supply and demand. There are a few facilities, and sometimes it's hard to get any bed at all. And so sometimes they've taken kids to Long Island, to all over the place to try to find a bed. Yeah. So it's a problem physically.
John, what do we do? Yeah, sorry.
For 16- and 7-year-olds who are accused of, say, a felony right now?
16- and 17-year-olds are not juveniles now.
Right.
They would be.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for that clarification.
Carol, are you?
Thank you.
Carol has the floor.
So I was just going to ask a question about the, as we look to weigh in on this juvenile, the switch to the age for being considered a juvenile, that if we're putting together figures for that to give to the state, that we look not only at the short-term costs but the long-term costs, because if you're looking at, does it short-term, does it cost more to transport? Yes. But if we take a more comprehensive look at what does it cost in ultimate jail cost or other costs that we end up paying for as a consequence of kids and being treated as adults, we may see a very different picture.
I would be, if you have a methodology in which we would be able to do that, first off, you'd be I'm sure a lot of social scientists would love to talk to you. But if you have a suggestion, please let Joe know. I think it's a tough one. I mean, obviously, the direct costs are very obvious, but having indirect costs, like a lot of policy, it's a challenge.
Well, I'd like to have us at least mention it, because I think it's really horribly damaging to be treating 16 and 17-year-olds as adults.
Right. I mean, I would be very much in favor of a whereas that says that, it's the belief of the legislature that putting these young people in jail settings with adults has an adverse effect on their lives, gives them bad role models, et cetera, and could affect their livelihoods later. I mean, something to that effect. I'm sure we can find something from some social scientist that has shown that and put a whereas that, to that effect.
Yeah, and costs. I mean, cost would not be my first criteria for how we treat people, but it does seem to be the measure that's used increasingly, and so I don't want to leave that part out.
Right. Well, I mean, we know that a lot of things are based on social networks, and I'm not talking about social networks online, right? And so, yeah, when you have a 16-year-old who's impressionable, and they're now in jail with a 24-year-old who had been you know, that has been involved in criminal behavior and has connections because they have been involved with criminal behavior, and that 16-year-old now has access to that social network. If they weren't part of it, then they wouldn't. If they weren't jailed, then they wouldn't be, have access to that social network. So I think there is a connection that could be made, because then now that, that the recidivism rate is probably higher because they got there when they were young. So yeah, we can look at that.
Jim Dennis.
We spoke about it somewhat at the committee, but I thought Jonathan's comments were right on point, because there are not facilities available to put people in if you're going to put them in somewhere. So you, essentially, they're not going. They're going to be treated in a way that, you know, they're going to limbo. For those of you who know what limbo is, but the real issue is, there are no places, or there's a shortage of places for young people to go to. If they're not going to be in an adult thing, then they have to be somewhere, and there aren't somewhere, and that's a real problem, I think.
Dan Klein.
Yeah, Nathan, can you tell us the date, time, and location of the meeting where the incident in Danby is supposed to be discussed?
Yes, yes. Well, that will be happening here in the county legislature, and our meetings now are the third Mondays at 4 o'clock. Is that right, Michelle? Yes. So whatever the third Monday is at 4 o'clock here in the legislature.
March 16th, 4 o'clock.
March 16th, yes.
Peter Stein. I'm sorry. Excuse me?
Nothing. I just cleared my throat.
You had your hand up.
Yeah, I had my hand up, yeah. You're recognizing me.
Recognizing you.
Hello. Thank you for recognizing me. I had it up a long time ago, and I'm trying to think about what I was going to say.
We can move on.
No. I wouldn't like that. I don't think it's, you know, it's worth a lot of time thinking about it, because it's going to come down from Albany either one way or the other. And to when I heard about this at the NYSAG meeting a couple of years ago, the big deal was the money that you have to make now a third classification of years. There's adults, there's in-betweens, and then there are juveniles. And that means you have to reconfigure your jail so that there are three classes of people in there. And in general, you can't reconfigure your jail that easily, and so it means you have to put them out there and you have to pay for it. But it's going to come down from Albany, and one way or the other, if our experience is any guide, they're not going to pay for it. They'll say, well, you just raise the money for it yourself. You just have to do it. And it could be disastrous, a lot of money involved. The other thing I want to say about the cameras, when I first heard about the cameras, I thought, my God, what a wonderful idea. You just do that, and then the whole problem disappears. And because the police are afraid to do something that they shouldn't be done. And of course, there's a lot to be said for that, but I've been reading a couple of things about it and looking at it from the point of view of a policeman, and one can say, well, it's only effective if it's on all the time, because as soon as it's off, then the policeman will do something wrong with it, because whatever. But on the other hand, if it's on all the time and public access to it, who would like to be a policeman? I mean, can you imagine somebody going through and looking at everything that this policeman had done?
Law enforcement officer.
Huh?
Law enforcement officer.
Why can't I say policeman?
It's a gender-neutral term rather than policeman. After the fourth time you said it, I just couldn't stand it.
Who am I talking to? Oh.
Resident feminist and worker advocate.
All right, I'm sorry. All right,
officer. Man. Policeman.
Oh, I see. All right. Police men and women. Okay.
So we can move on.
So it strikes me as really tricky to do it right. And I would think, instead of trying something, the first thing is to assemble the most information you can from everybody else that has been doing it, and from important schools that teach criminal justice, and see what they have to say about it, because it looks to me like there's all kinds of pitfalls depending on how you arrange it, so that what the results will be. So that's what
I think you should do is spend a lot of time reading about it.
That's right, Peter, and that's why we're waiting until April for that draft policy. The draft policy to be out there is to give that time. And the sheriff has actually brought in vendors, has met with or discussed it with other entities that have it. For example, the Schuyler County Sheriff, also Niagara County. I don't know if they have it yet, but they're maybe working towards it. But he's already met with them, talked to them, got their policies, got their feedback. So he's in that process, and we'll incorporate it into the draft policy. But, of course, then with the draft policy, we'll still have 2 months before we decide to finalize it.
I think,
it'll be tough.
You know, for me, I'd write to the FBI and see if they've got something to say about it, if they have a recommended procedure to follow.
But one thing I do want to note is that, actually, this has not been – there hasn't been a lot of resistance from our law enforcement officers. And the reason why is because, you know, nowadays, like, everybody walks around with one of these, and when something happens, what's the first thing that they're doing? Recording it. And so you have the perspective of whoever has their phone out and is recording it, but you don't necessarily have the perspective of the officer. And so if you have body cameras, now you have that. And there's some comfort in that for officers. Also, there are a lot of I shouldn't use words like that. There are times when people falsely accuse officers of things, and the officers would love to be able to have body cameras, not only to give their side, but also they believe that there's a preventative aspect that people knowing that they're being recorded will act differently. And so that's why they have not been too resistant to this.
Right. So well, maybe they haven't thought it through, but there's no one who can be perfect all the time.
Sure.
You always, you know, you say something wrong, you look the wrong place, and if you feel there's a camera on you every minute of your shift, it must be an impossible life.
I mean, but I would assume, too, just from a FOIL perspective, right? Nobody could say, hey, I want to see Joe Mariana's camera for 8 hours all day, right? Wouldn't they have to have a purpose, say what they're looking for, specify times? I mean, I don't know.
They would have to be somewhat specific. I don't think the way these cameras work, though, have them on all the time.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the way it will. I think they're clicked on when situations arise. So there is a policy issue. How do you make sure that they're on at the right times and so forth? But I don't believe it's a continuous stream of video from these cameras.
Martha, then I'd like to, then Dooley, and then I'd like to move to the resolution.
It's a very exciting committee.
Nate, if I spaced out and I'm repeating, I'm sorry. Did you mention that Letts is going to be kind of looking at the policy?
Oh, yeah. No, okay. I did not mention that.
All right. There's an interest in, you know, the city's already talked about having a program like this, and we have other law enforcement agencies, and it turns out that Letts, which we can never remember what it stands for. Law enforcement, technologies club, or something, I don't know. it's the intermunicipal group that includes representatives from every law enforcement agency in the county, including the state police. They meet regularly, and our ITS department is very involved. I think they staff the group. They're really taking hold of this. They're looking at it and sort of leading this policy development, which is really important because so that whatever we learn is shared with the city and other law enforcement agencies and vice versa, and also so that, if possible, we come up with a coordinated strategy. Yep. So, and maybe, you know, a bigger purchase is less expensive, et cetera. So it was good to know that Letts is really leading that.
Thanks for bringing that
up. Julie?
I was going to ask where this stands in the city discussion. I saw JR come in, and I thought maybe he could tell us.
Yeah.
And JR left.
And JR left, so he can't tell
us. So the undersheriff has been in constant communications. The city has actually decided on what tech that they want to get, but they still have not sorted out the policy questions. And so so that is being discussed, and Ari Levine is sharing that information with the undersheriff so that we can be on the same page.
Nate?
I just want to follow up with Martha.
Sure.
Or whoever went to NYSAC. Was Letts at NYSAC?
No.
Was there like a vendor booth with them and they had some information?
Our Letts group?
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Nathan, could you move Resolution B that was pulled off the consent agenda?
Yes.
All right. Oh, hold on. I have to pull it up on my computer here. All right. I would like to move Resolution B, authorization to accept an award of a grant from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion? Dooley?
I asked for it to come off because, once again, I was reading the memo, and I was interested to see that the grant spans years. It's October 2014 to September 2015, which for once doesn't mean it's going to roll into the future. But I thought that period of time should be in the resolution, probably in line 4.
Okay.
From the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services for the period October 2014 through September 2015 to help defray.
That's friendly.
That's fine.
Yeah. Right.
Friendly to the seconder?
Yeah.
Jim? All right. Ready to vote amended with that small change? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. It's time for break. We have two committee reports left, Workforce and Health and Human Services. Are they going to be lengthy reports, Peter?
Negative, not lengthy.
Would you like to push through then and see if we can't end the meeting, everyone? All right.
Sounds like a plan.
Push on through to the other side.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean-Claiborne is our chair.
Well, I just want to echo with great emphasis what our county administrator said earlier about the climate survey and asking my colleagues, as well as any of our employees who might be watching us, to please, please, please fill out the survey. It really is important for us to get that sense of where we are, what we're doing right, what we're not doing right, and where we need to go. We are spending some money on this and want to do it right. So please, and if you run into department heads, employees, please encourage folks to do it. You all got a copy of this flyer. There's some information on the back, just some facts. We thoroughly want to have as good a response as we can get. It closes on Friday. So as much as you can, please encourage people as you see them. Say, did you do the climate survey? It literally only takes about 15 to 20 minutes to get done. And the questions are quite interesting. And I'm speaking to myself as well because I need to do it. So, just really encouraging everyone. And WDIC will meet next Wednesday, the 25th, at 3:30 in the old jail. That's my
questions report. For Leslin. Okay, let's move to Health and Human Services. Peter Stein is the chair.
HHS has not met since the last meeting, and our next meeting will be March the 5th at 4 o'clock.
Any questions for Peter? That was easy. Let's go to minutes of previous meeting, February 5th, 2015. Someone want to move them? Jim Dennis, is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Leslin. Discussion. Dooley?
I'm looking at page 4 of the minutes. Report from the county administrator, the first paragraph. The last line says he's hosting the meeting that is intended to elicit ideas. And I'm sure you mean elicit.
We could use some illicit ideas. We're good at it.
Any objection to that change? Ready to vote? All those in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? We have one against. I'm sorry, I have one abstain. Well, we can't really abstain unless you've got a conflict. But so you can either vote yes or no.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Dave McKenna?
Yeah, Mike, I forgot one thing that I wanted to mention in my report, if you will. The Health and Human Services building is apparently coming along on schedule and running fairly smoothly, with the exception of a broken water line on Super Sunday, which, again, county employees came in and did what needed to be done and gave up the day for the betterment of the county. So thank you guys for everything you did.
Thanks, Dave, for that update. Are we ready to adjourn?
Yes.
Is there a motion from Jim Dennis? Yes. Is there a second?
Second
from Leslin. All in favor of adjournment, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you, everyone. Good meeting. Crisp, and we got through a lot of business tonight.
Thank you, Michelle. So do you want me to just hold up on putting anything?